Jovan Buha! Buha!
Yo, yo! I'm Jovan Buha, NBA reporter and analyst for Buha's Block. And we have some breaking news this morning. LeBron James is returning for a 24th season in the NBA, but it is not going to be as a Los Angeles Laker. And so the Laker-LeBron era has officially ended after 8 seasons together, a championship together, 8 All-Star appearances, 5 All-NBA appearances. And I am a bit surprised. I thought it was trending toward this direction, but I, you know, until it actually happens, I didn't think it was the more likely outcome, I would say. I was asked about this yesterday and I said it was about 50.5% him staying, 49.5% him leaving. But that had been a drop from earlier in the week where I said 57%. So like it was trending toward LeBron leaving, I felt. And I thought there were some signs with the Golden State situation and then also with just how LA was moving in terms of the Austin contract and some of their priorities in free agency and just pursuing some of these bigger names in restricted free agency, just did not feel like a team that was necessarily prioritizing LeBron. And theoretically, they could have gone out, done some of those moves and came back to him. But I don't think he wanted that and clearly just wanted to move on. And I think we could spend like 3 hours talking about the dynamic between the two sides. And I don't have 3 hours to break this down. So I want to break it down for a few minutes, then get into the potential where, and then get into what's next for LA. So why, where, and what's next for LA? In terms of why, I think this had been a slow burn to this outcome, frankly, for years. And anytime I've been asked on here about the dynamic between the Lakers and LeBron, it always gets aggregated, but one of the things I continually say is it's been a marriage of convenience for a while, and there has been, I would say, a mutually beneficial marriage of convenience, but that's, I think, the position they've been in for at least a couple of years, if not potentially longer, and there has been some tension at times here, and whether it was that 2024 deadline and the flirtation with the Warriors or the 2025 deadline and the Luka trade and how that situation was handled. And you know, prior to that, the clutch trying to put some pressure on the Lakers to add a center to play with AD and LeBron. And instead it ends up resulting in AD getting traded. And to say nothing of some of the other things that have happened, I think really the fracture started with the Westbrook trade, and not just the Westbrook trade and how it led to the two sides never fully trusting each other again, but more so it just created this fracture that, and with also the blame game afterward and both sides kind of pointing the finger at the other one. I just felt like that was the, as far back as that was, like that started to create some of the tension that to me just never quite went away. And like any relationship, like any dynamic, there were some highs, there were some lows, there were times things were close. I think about the viral LeBron clip with Jeannie on International Women's Day. Like there were, I don't think, it's not a black and white situation, there's shades of gray, but I don't think this had been the same dynamic, definitely for the last couple of years, but I think it had even extended a little bit beyond that. And I think the writing was on the wall to some degree with last summer and the way that that contract played out in terms of the fact that there was no talks from either side about an extension, and not LeBron asking for a longer term deal and not the Lakers offering that to him. Like that to me wasn't the end yet, but it was trending toward, okay, like both sides are okay here with potentially moving on. Ultimately, this ends up being LeBron's decision, and he informs the Lakers this morning that he is not going to be returning. I think in a way, this is a win-win for both sides, because for the Lakers, as much as it could be a step back, and I think that's the part that the people who have been trying to push LeBron out all year or all summer, I think are overlooking, is that there's a real likelihood, if not more likely than not, that the Lakers are a worse basketball team now without LeBron James, or at least have less top-end talent than they do. I mean, just losing LeBron, like all the names, we could Walker Kessler, Jalen Duren, Peyton Watson, they're all worse basketball players than LeBron James today. So do they fit long-term better? Sure, yes. Like they're younger, they are long-term starters and cornerstones for this new era with Luka and Austin, but none of the names I've seen realistically floated to the Lakers are better basketball players than LeBron. So that's the thing where like the Lakers might take a step back this season. And I mean, it depends. We'll see with free agency coming up, how they shape the roster. But for the Lakers, you have clarified things where there is no more tension of this guy is in the ultimate win now mode. He is one of the greatest players of all time, arguably the greatest. And he expects to be going all in, trading all the picks, trying to win now. And he needs immediacy. And now it's like, okay, they're on the Luka timeline. He's 27. He wants to win now as well. But there's a little bit more leeway there in terms of you're trying to balance both the short term with Luka in terms of trying to win this season, but you're also taking a long-term view of the next five seasons or so. And what does the roster look like 3 years from now? What does the roster look like 5 years from now? What does the roster look like 7 years from now? Like these are things that GMs are and organizations are constantly weighing and constantly charting out. So the Lakers are trying to balance a short, medium, and long-term view with Luka, whereas with LeBron, it was always just with the state of where he's at in his career, it's obviously a short-term thing of maybe another year, maybe another couple years. So for the Lakers, I think as of right now, they take a clear step back. There's no denying that. We'll see how they try to fill that gap and if they're able to land one of the RFAs or able to make some trades or whatnot. But I think there is at least some clarity here moving forward of this is officially, undoubtedly, like the Luka era, Luka's team. Austin right now is the number two. We'll see if they add someone above him or not. And they're moving forward with this. And the model is going to be looking at that start that they had to the season pre-LeBron, the first 14 games. I believe they went 10-4. Like, you know, trying to extrapolate that into an 82-game season and see with the two high-level ball handlers and pick-and-roll practitioners with some shooting, with some athleticism, with some defense, like, what can this group look like? So from the Lakers' side, I think even if they get worse, they do... And it's more now it's clear like you're building to optimize Luka and Austin, because if they had the truth is like if they had brought LeBron back, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, but like they're better, but there's still that tension that they're trying to figure out what's the best way to use everyone offensively. Like in some ways this clarifies that, and now they have two high level offensive players and everything else is about fitting role players within that. Now from the LeBron side, I think there were clearly times he felt either disrespected or unappreciated or whatever this past year. And I think even, you know, times the past few years. And for him, you know, it comes out yesterday that Brian Windhorst reports that the most important thing to LeBron is going to be happiness. And clearly that was not being in LA, despite his family being out here, despite having his roots here for the past 8 years, he was no longer happy or as happy as he felt he should be. And so he now gets an opportunity to pick his next destination. Maybe it's a reunion with a Cleveland or a Miami, or maybe it's going to a rival like Golden State or San Antonio. But he now gets to dictate the final chapter of his career and prioritizing either playing with some friends and Steph Curry and Draymond Green, and for a coach he really loves and respects and Steve Kerr, or going back to the old stomping grounds, going back to Cleveland or Miami and having the unfinished business there, or maybe going to San Antonio and taking Wemby under his wing and slotting in there at the four. Like, and maybe there's another team that will emerge here in the next few hours that, you know, we're not aware of as of right now. So I think for LeBron, this is just a situation where he can feel a bit more respected and celebrated and honored. And I don't think there was outright disrespect, in my opinion. At least the Lakers wanted to keep him back and wanted to, they could still pay him more than anybody else, but clearly he just felt it was time for a new, you know, a new phase of his career. And I don't fault him for that. I think in some ways this is a win-win, in my opinion, right? Where again, the Lakers get their clarity They have a clear direction that they're moving toward now. And LeBron gets to pick his future and be in a situation that he will feel happier in. And you can't really fault a guy for, you know, picking that. In terms of the where, you know, I just mentioned four teams that I think make the most sense and or have been linked to LeBron publicly and privately: Golden State, Miami, Cleveland, San Antonio. Golden State, Miami, and San Antonio all project to have the full non-taxpayer MLE, depending on how things, like, you know, depending on what other moves they make. San Antonio did re-sign Julian Champagne and Harrison Barnes. So there is, as I mentioned yesterday, some competition there at the four. They got Keldon Johnson there as well. I think clearly LeBron James is better than all of those guys, but just curious how they would reshape the rotation if they were to add someone like LeBron. Miami and Golden State are interesting from a basketball standpoint because the fit in the front court with, I mean, it depends how Golden, if Golden State ends up adding AD and if they truly are a package deal, but if they add AD and it ends up being something like AD, Draymond, LeBron, or if he goes to Miami and it's something like Bam, Giannis, LeBron, the shooting in those two front courts is just really non-existent, subpar. So the spacing and shooting would be a major concern. With Golden State, you could at least make up for that to some degree with Steph. But in Miami, they just don't have the requisite shooting that you would want to offset some of those spacing concerns with that front court. Now, to be clear, like, those front courts would be mammoth and would be physically imposing, and having Draymond and AD together defensively, and then LeBron could be in a helper off-ball role. Miami, similar thing with Giannis and Bam. I don't want to overthink the fit, and I think defensively those teams would be awesome, but I do think we've seen in the modern NBA, like, you need a certain baseline level of shooting and spacing. A lot of recent champions have had spacing fives, and Golden State would have that with Porzingis and Horford, even if they are in bench roles, but they're not AD or Draymond. And so, I mean, you could throw out Porzingis and AD together, potentially, depending on the matchup. So they could get funky there in Golden State if they're able to pull that trade off. But I think for LeBron, like, to me, the most interesting one for LeBron would be San Antonio. And I don't know if that's a non-starter. Like, when I think about LeBron's career, the team he cannot go to, or in my opinion, would never go to, is Boston, right? Like, that's the team he's played the most in the playoffs, has the most history with. I don't see him going to Boston. I don't see him going to the Clippers either, and going to the crosstown rival. And, you know, he's taken shots at the Clippers over the years. But I'm also like, is he going to go to San Antonio or Golden State, where those are the teams in the West that he's had the most battles with, right? And playing San Antonio in the finals a couple times, you know, three times, playing Golden State in the finals four times, and losing to both those teams and having some beef at times with those teams. Like, I just, maybe, I mean, maybe enough time has passed, right? And especially, I think, in Golden State with his relationship that has developed over the years with Steph, obviously the dynamic with Draymond, and playing for Steve Kerr on the Olympic team, maybe enough time has passed. That's also the easiest one to commute from LA. I've talked about, you could live in LA, fly up there, get a hotel, get a loft, whatever, and you know, he'll be fine commuting an hour from LA to San Francisco. So I think the San Antonio one would be the most interesting. Now, people will come after him and say he's ring chasing, and I get that. That was a team that was in the finals, but they did need a certain amount of physicality at the four. That Keldon Johnson just had a really rough postseason. Champagne is more of a three, masquerading as a four. And then sometimes, you know, I think Harrison Barnes got played off the floor in a couple series there, especially, you know, OKC in New York. So LeBron could check that box, and they do have the defensive personnel to hide him, to rest him. And then offensively, he could be that late game closer, which we still saw him be with the Lakers this past season. So that, to me, is the one that's like the most intriguing. Golden State feels like the one that's the most likely, especially with all the noise that's been there the last couple of years and how close it is to LA and just how convenient that would be. And then, does he want to go back to Cleveland and Miami? Like, Miami, he did not end things on the best terms. I think things are better. They've kind of patched it together, but does he like Miami's a situation where you're not going to be running things, especially now that they just got Giannis. Like it's going to be a different dynamic if he goes there. And then Cleveland is also the situation that as of right now could pay him the least. Maybe there's a sign and trade there with Jared Allen and he ends up going there and you know making more money and the Lakers get Jared Allen back. I think that would be something the Lakers would definitely be open to. And now does LeBron want to go to a Jared Allen-less Cavs team? That's an open-ended question because that, I think that would be a blow to the center spot. So if I had to rank these in terms of probability right now, I'd probably go Golden State 1. I'd probably go Golden State 1, Cleveland 2, Miami 3, San Antonio 4, but I think it's relatively close. And I think San Antonio would be really interesting. But again, maybe there's a dark horse team that emerges here. And then in terms of what's next for the Lakers, so I said it a little bit ago, I think the Lakers are on paper. I mean, the Lakers entered free agency with a pretty underwhelming roster right now. I've talked about like it's Luka and Austin. Okay, nice start, great foundation. Then it there's a tier drop off, a few tier drop offs to DeAndre Ayton. Then there's another few tier drop offs to Jake LaRavia, Jared Vanderbilt. Then there's probably another tier or two down to now we're in the Adu, Bronny. We don't yet know how to place Cameron Carr. And then I think that's everybody. If I'm not Dalton, that much, which maybe we'll go down another tier, put Dalton there. So, I mean, that's the team right now. And it's Luka, Austin, and DeAndre are the only guys I feel comfortable playing in a playoff rotation. And I think Luka and Austin are clearly the starters and the stars of the team. But DA to me should be a backup moving forward. So the Lakers have a ton of work to do. I think they have three starting spots they have to fill and most of a bench that they have to fill, and maybe Adu or you know Cameron Carr pops and they are part of that rotation. But I think that could also be wishful thinking, just assuming that they're going to immediately be, you know, in Carr's case as a rookie, in Adu's case like as a still, you know, raw second year player. I think that's more of an assumption than an actual reality as of right now. So the Lakers have probably like 7 of their top 10 rotation spots to still fill out. And that's to say nothing of potentially, you know, trading DeAndre Ayton. Maybe you throw Jake in there. I think JJ would probably have Jake in the top 10. So 6 of the 10, but still you want Jake at the back end of that rotation, ideally as like the 10th man. And then DA might get flipped anyway. They'll retain Jackson Hayes. And so that'll give, you know, another spot. So you got 5 out of the 10 as of right now, but 3 starters within that and then 2 bench guys. And you are losing, as of right now, I mean, you're losing LeBron and you're probably almost certainly losing Marcus Smart. And those are 2 of your starters, 2 of your 4 best players from last year's team, 2 guys who are major contributors in that first round series. I would argue were the Lakers 2 best players in that first round series. It's debate between Marcus and Rui for that second spot, but at a minimum, 2 of their 3 best players in that series. And that's a big blow. So LA, and like if they get the big fish, right? They get the Walker Kessler, they get the Jalen Duren, they get the Peyton Watson. I've said that would be a win for me in terms of a lot like long-term view here. You got a long-term starter that you've failed to get the last 3 transaction cycles with Luka. At the same time, those guys are not just like covering immediately for LeBron and Marcus departing. Those are 2 separate roles. Like LeBron was playing a 2-man game with Luka and Austin, being a passing hub, being a mismatch post-hunting hub, and just all the things that LeBron brings with his basketball IQ and his skill and his still athleticism and power at age 41. Can Peyton Watson do some of those things? Like not the passing, but can he maybe replicate some of the scoring, some of the rebounding, some of the overall athleticism and force in the front court? Sure. But he's not as good as LeBron currently. And then even if he does that, I mean, he can do some of what Marcus does defensively. And I think ultimately has a higher ceiling than like the current version of Marcus defensively. But that's a lot to put on one player's plate. And that's not even the guy necessarily that the Lakers are targeting most right now. They're targeting the center spot. So the Lakers are going to have to find a way to replace LeBron and Marcus. And that's basically your number 2 or 3 option, depending on how you want to frame it, depending on how you put the hierarchy. And then your top defensive stopper. Like those are 2 really important positions, I think, on this team that the Lakers are like that, those are two big holes. And so I think it still starts with the RFAs for me. I think the Lakers, like to me now, there's even a little bit more pressure to nail it and get one of those guys, because the drop off from the RFAs to the rest of free agency is enormous, in my opinion. I mean, if you guys saw my center and wing target rankings, the RFAs, the three RFAs, Walker Kessler, Jalen Duren, Peyton Watson, those are the only three guys I had in tier one franchise cornerstones. Everybody else that's out there, including on the trade market, in my opinion, that's realistic for the Lakers, is somewhere between like a solid starter to a high level bench guy. And so, you know, we just start going down the list and it gets kind of grim quickly. You saw like the back end of those top tens. Those are some names you probably wouldn't want to be relying on. So Lakers have their work cut out here in terms of they're going to have the meeting, you know, the meetings with Jalen Duren and Walker Kessler to open free agency. And Duren has the whole Sacramento situation looming. Kessler, I think there's less competition. Really, Brooklyn is the only other team that has cap space to get in that mix. I did talk about this last night. Technically, there's a possibility where you could do a three-team trade, double-sided trade with Detroit, Sacramento, and Utah. Send Kessler to Detroit, Duren to Sacramento, and Sabonis to Utah. I don't think that's going to happen, but that's technically within the realm of possibility. And really, like taking a step back, I think one of the big things the Lakers have to decide, and it seems like they're going to operate as a cap space team, because part of the cap space proposition was LeBron being off of the books. He will be off of the books. They technically could operate above the cap if they keep Rui Hachimura, Luke Kennard, and Maxi Kleba on the books. That would offset the projected cap space that they have right now. But I don't foresee that. I think they're just going to rescind the rights to all those guys, operate with the cap space, and then make their moves out of that. I just wanted to clarify that, like, technically they could operate above the cap based on how high some of those cap holds still are. But like the key to me is, can you get one of the RFAs, whether that's, I think a sign and trade would be more likely for Kessler and Duren. For Watson, I think it might have to be just a monster offer sheet that Denver doesn't want to match. I don't see Denver and the Lakers coming to terms on a sign and trade. I think if it's a trade with Denver and the Lakers, it's them trying to dump Christian Brown or Cam Johnson on the Lakers and attaching some sort of asset. So can you pry one of the RFAs? That's like the best talent play, in my opinion, to try to get as close as you can to replacing LeBron, at least from a talent perspective. Again, LeBron's better than all those guys, but you do need a long-term starter. And those are the guys I have the most confidence in terms of how they would age. Because once we start getting into the next tier of the Derek, on the center spot, like Derek Lively, then I had drop off to Gafford, Williams, Robinson. Williams is off the market now. He got a monster deal, 3 years, 44. Gafford and Robinson come with a ton of injury mark questions. And just, I view Gafford as like a fringe starter. I view Robinson as clearly a backup, as a guy that should be playing like 18 minutes a night, not a guy that you're starting playing 27 minutes a night. And then it's, you know, it's the imperfect fit of Miles Turner, who is, you know, rebounds like a big wing and also dunks the ball as often as a guard. And it's like, do you want that guy, you know, as your starting five? I just don't see the fit there. And, or it's DeAndre Ayton, where there's a clear ceiling. You're not going to beat the best teams in the league. You can win a round with DeAndre Ayton. You're not winning a second round. So the Lakers are in a tough spot here where, again, I think there's clarity with the vision, and I understand the moving forward without him. And obviously it was more of his decision than theirs, although I don't think they were moving in a way in terms of trying to keep him necessarily. But I think there's a ton of pressure now to nail one of the RFAs. And if you can't, I think you're building a short-term roster. Like my fear in terms of a worst case scenario here is now LA doesn't get one of the RFAs, and then they sign some of these guys to like 3-year deals. If it's not one of the RFAs, if the player, like, unless you're trading for someone, obviously I think there's some guys you'd want to trade for, but if you are signing guys, if I'm the Lakers, I'm not signing guys past like 2-year deals. I do not, for the most part, right? Like it's a blanket statement. I don't want to oversimplify it, but most of the guys I'm hearing the Lakers attached to, I would not want to sign for more than like a couple years. Just, you know, if it's Mitch Robinson, if it's Mamu, these are guys I would want. No player options, by the way, but like a 2-year deal, and then you evaluate where you are in a couple years. I'm not signing Mitchell Robinson to like a 4-year deal. I mean, depends on the number. If it's low enough, maybe, but not 4, you know, maybe 3, but
I would prioritize at that point flexibility, because I don't think those guys are long-term pieces. And like, if Mitchell Robinson has another injury plague season, you're probably going to want to move off him. And if it's at a certain number, or if it's at a certain contract length, that's a really difficult contract to get off of. In terms of power forward specifically, names I've heard linked with the Lakers, they've been linked to the Lakers in general, but I think more so specifically like now post LeBron, John Collins, Jonathan Kuminga, Tobias Harris. Those are, I think, three obvious names that would fit with the Lakers. If you add in Rui and the possibility of him being the starting four moving forward, I think I would rank that. I would definitely go John Collins one. I think John Collins is easily the best of those four in terms of the Lakers' specific needs, where he's got the right, like he's a better shooter than Kuminga, not as good of a shooter as, actually pretty similar to level shooter to Tobias. I think Tobias can be a higher volume shooter at a similar level. So I'd give Tobias the edge. Definitely Rui's, you know, the best shooter of the four, but he's also the best rebounder of the four. And you could argue the best defender of the four. And he's got the flexibility to play small ball five. So my top target for the Lakers to replace LeBron, and again, replace LeBron is like a loose term because you're not actually going to replace LeBron with this player, but from a fit perspective, I would really target John Collins among the current guys. I think he's a guy that, that's one where I would consider a three-year deal if it really came down to it. You know, still probably prefer two, but maybe three. Then in terms of, I would say Tobias for me is definitely last of the four. I think he's held up fine defensively, and I thought he had, you know, solid playoffs, but I would just rather have Rui than Tobias. I think Tobias is probably better defensively, but I think Tobias is also a guy you're going to have to run a certain amount of offense for, where I would just rather have Rui in that spot, and Rui's a better shooter than him, though Tobias is probably the better rebounder slightly. So that one's close, but also based on, I think Tobias is going to make more money than Rui. So I would rather just have Rui than Tobias. And then Kuminga is the wild card for me, because I think there's two different versions of Kuminga. If you got a, let's say a humble version of Kuminga, where he is willing to embrace the dirty work and he's like, it didn't work out in Golden State, Atlanta didn't pick up my team option, and I'm now on my third team and I'm willing to embrace, like, I'm not a star, I'm not a future all-star, I am going to maybe be the third option depending on how the offense shakes out and how the roster develops, but I'm not going to be worried about that. I'm going to be worried about screening, rolling, cutting, spacing, rebounding, defending, doing all the little things and being on my best behavior to be this really unique, athletic, skilled role player with maybe more talent to do bigger stuff. But like in a winning context, I think having to take a step back in his role. That version of Kuminga is probably second to me. So that version of Kuminga, I think I would go Collins, Kuminga, Rui, Harris. If it's the version of Kuminga that we've seen at times in Golden State and that Atlanta apparently passed on, then like that version, I might go Collins, Rui, Kuminga. I mean, I'm not the biggest Harris guy, so I'd still probably go Kuminga, Harris. And there's like a talent and upside play. I just think the Lakers need to be prioritizing certain things that, like, Collins to me is the most well-rounded and checks the most boxes of athleticism, can play the five, not, I guess, can't guard down as well as maybe, like, Kuminga, I think, has the most defensive versatility of the four, most athleticism, but you're also, I think, you have a young player who still potentially views himself in a certain light that I think could be problematic on a team with a clear hierarchy and also needs certain things from their front court players. So I think Collins to me is the guy who checks the most boxes, which is some of the dirty work stuff, the rebounding. He could be, if you get the stretch five, if you get the Turner, if you get the Mamu, he could be still that lob threat pick and roll partner with Luka, with Austin. Whereas those other guys, I mean, Kuminga could maybe do that. I don't know that that's necessarily a strength. And then Rui and Tobias are exclusively pick and pop guys, or maybe in Tobias's case, you could find, if they switch, you could put him in the post against the guard, but that's not necessarily something you want to spam. So yeah, I think the Lakers are a ton of pressure here in terms of what they do. I think you have to prioritize, go after Kessler, Durin, Watson hard, get one of those three. I would prefer Kessler or Watson. I would rank it, my personal rankings, including Price, would be Kessler, Watson, Durin. I would rather have Peyton Watson at $12 to $15 million less than Jalen Durin, including Jalen Durin's, I would say, questionable defensive fit with Luka and Austin specifically. But I think you try to get one of those three. If you can't, then you're going to have to patch it together. Like, I would also be aggressive on the trade market. This is where you up your offer to New Orleans for Herb Jones and Yves Missi. This is where whatever other conversations you've been having, you try to ramp that up. But the Lakers are moving on from LeBron. LeBron's moving on from the Lakers, and we'll see where he goes. We'll see how they try to replace him and whether this is a better roster. And it's not just LeBron now. It's also likely Marcus Smart. Like, those are two big pieces from last season. But with all that said, let's get into some Q&A here. I do have a hard out at 11 a.m. With Lakers Collective, so I will be trying to go through these relatively quickly. Mint Millions, thank you for the super chat. After Lakers, they wasted 8 years of his career and pissed him off so much. Now he wants to leave because of it. Won't be watching anymore. I understand this perspective, and I understand a lot of LeBron fans are going to be mad. They're going to be tuning out. And I have long said I don't police fandom. I don't tell people what to root for or how to root for things. And if that's how you feel, I have empathy for you, and I have empathy for the situation. So I'm not going to disagree or debate you here. I would agree that I think the Lakers botched it basically from the post title season. They botched roster after roster. I mean, the 2021-22 season was an absolute disaster, with not only did they not even make the play in, but half of that roster was out of the, like, I don't think it gets enough attention that half of their roster was out of the NBA, and it wasn't some situation where it was a tanking team. Like, we've seen some tanking rosters where they have all these young guys, or it's a combination of young guys and old veterans, and it's like guys on the fringes of the NBA, and it's purposeful, and then those guys are out of the league. So, like, a roster losing half of its players out of the NBA isn't inherently unique. It's unique, but, like, you know, it's happened before. I think the crazy thing was, this was a group that was going for it. They were trying to be like, all right, we had the bad luck last year. AD goes down, LeBron goes down, AD goes down against Phoenix. Like, we would have won that series. We could have gone back to back. Let's run it back. We brought in Russ. We bring in Trevor Ariza, Wayne Ellington, all these guys. And it was like just a complete disaster. And then half of those guys were out of the NBA and never played again. So that, then you follow that up with kind of running back part of that roster and then eventually remaking it at the deadline. You go in the Western Conference Finals run. But from that point, I think even if we say, okay, like the Russ thing exists over here, that was inevitable. They wanted some ball handling. They wanted a third star. Okay, they make the Russ trade. The issue to me, I think, in retrospect, like, of course, you go back, you don't do the Russ trade. But if you're living in the universe where you do the Russ trade, I think that 2023 offseason was the mistake, because the Lakers, to me, made a giant miscalculation of, they looked at, okay, well, we made this run to the Western Conference Finals. We got swept by Denver, but we're this close and we just need to run it back to a degree and move forward. And that's when you get the Vando extension, which was a giant mistake. You get the Rui extension, which I think was fine. I do wonder if they could have got him at a slightly lower number, but whatever. You also had D'Lo re-signing, and that was also the summer of Gabe Vincent and Torian Prince. And so that, to me, was like, that was a rough summer where I think you made some questionable re-signing / extensions. And then you also added your head coach's favorite player, Torian Prince. And then you added Gabe Vincent, which ended up being a bust. And in a sea of questionable mid-level and exception signings, that one might have been the most damaging of all. I think that's even worse than Kendrick Nunn or Lonnie Walker or some of these other ones, just because he actually, like, I mean, he missed a bunch of time like Kendrick Nunn, but then when he was available, he also was playing at the expense of better players. So I think that was the summer where the Lakers miscalculated things. They decided to run it back. They decided, hey, we're close enough. When really, like, yes, the Denver series was close, but you got swept. You needed some grand changes to the roster. And the fact that from that point on through the Luka trade, if you look at the way that they operated, they basically made no trades. they didn't make any real impact signings. Like, again, when we're talking about Gabe Vincent and Torian Prince, those were bench players that you were adding that you were almost elevating to a certain role. That stretch of like 2023 summer through the Luka trade was the stretch to me that basically killed that era and led to ultimately this going the way that it did, at least from a basketball perspective. That's to say nothing of some of the off-court stuff, some of the dynamics, some of the relationships. But yeah, I mean, I think they botched the second half of the LeBron era. And of course, there's some blood on his hands with the Westbrook trade and pushing for that. At the same time, you didn't need to be a rocket scientist to look at the situation and be like, Russ isn't going to work. So if I'm the Lakers, I'm throwing myself in front of the train and saying, we will trade. You want another ball handler? You want another star? We will get you one, but we're not getting you Russell Westbrook. It's not going to work. And I don't think that you didn't need a crystal ball to know that Russ was not going to work. I think it worked even worse than like the skeptics thought. Like, I was very skeptical of the trade. It went worse than even I thought, but it was pretty clear it was not going to work based on just the fit limitations with Russ needing the ball and also being a terrible off-ball shooter. So I don't agree. I mean, I don't disagree with you. I think there's a lot of nuance within this that we could have a longer conversation, and we will have this conversation in later today and then in the coming days, but I hear you. Reef Strongest Soldier, thank you for the super chat. Never had a worse day in my fandom. Miss you, Bron. I think this is another part of this where fans are going to be emotional today, and I totally understand it. I'm still processing all of this and just like LeBron, I know some people never fully embraced him, but I also think some people did, right? And certainly a segment of the fan base did. I don't know the splits between who didn't embrace him versus who did, but like, I think there has been this narrative or this notion out there that Laker fans just don't like LeBron or never fully embraced him. And I think that is true to a degree. And I see it all the time in the super chats, but there's also a giant segment that has and has viewed him as a Laker, has appreciated the 2020 title and him coming to the franchise at its low point and within 2 years delivers with the title. Like, I think that part kind of gets glossed over of the Lakers' perception had never been worse than it was around that 2016 to 2018 range. It was the nadir of the franchise. They had never missed the playoffs 5 years in a row. They had rarely missed the playoffs in general, but never had a streak like that. And LeBron comes, and sure, parts like he benefits from being a Laker. It took, I think his brand was already sky high, but it took it to a little bit higher, right? And there's just a different sheen playing for the Lakers, especially when you deliver a title. But yeah, it's a tough day for a lot of Laker fans, and I feel for you guys. Pleasers, thank you for the super chat. Rob loses LeBron, Smart, Rui to Max AR and overpay Kessler Duren if lucky, and people want to discuss contending, LOL, wasting Luka's prime like LeBron and AD. This has been something I have been nervous about, and I tried to hit on this yesterday in both of my streams, that my fear right now is that the Lakers, or this has kind of been what I've been saying for months for those who've been listening, like, I think the Lakers are going to get the guy, and I said this yesterday, they're going to get like the name, right? And whether that's Kessler, Duren, Watson, or they trade for someone that wins the press conference, is the nice headliner, you feel good about that player being a part of it. And by my own logic, by my own reasoning, that would be a successful offseason because I think the Lakers need some long-term pieces. And if you get a stud long-term piece, okay, cool. I think that that's, you know, the bare minimum win for LA, but a win. The issue is the rest of the roster, because now I think you're in a position where if you do spend so much of your cap space, like, you just might be, I mean, you could throw Luke into this potentially too, depending on if they want to use the room exception. Like, I would argue that if the Lakers lose LeBron, Marcus, and Rui, I don't even know if I want to throw the room exception at Luke, because at that point you're losing two power forwards and your best perimeter defender. So like, yes, I guess you could argue Luke's shooting is there to offset the Rui departure, but Luke, to me, the difference between Luke and Rui, and this is why I've said I would prioritize Rui over Luke, even factoring in that Rui's probably going to make double the amount of money, is just because Rui can, even with his defense limitations, fit theoretically to some degree with Luka and Austin. I think there's a real ceiling there in terms of Luke actually fitting with Luka and Austin. So if I'm prioritizing guys and trying to retain them, I am thinking about the big picture of like, how much can they actually play with the best players? And Rui, I do view as a high level bench guy on a championship level team, maybe as a placeholder starter for the Lakers in the short term. But if they lose him, that's its own blow. But like, Luke is not going to be a starter. As long as you have Luka and Austin, he's going to be a bench guy, and he's going to be a bench guy that's specifically playing with one of those guys in certain lineups, not with both. So that, to me, like, Luke's fit on this team with the healthy Luka and Austin, I mean, we saw it before those guys went out. He was that 15 to 20 minute a night guy that was, you know, maybe you bring him out there for like a late game possession, but you're not consistently playing him with those guys. And so my fear right now is they just don't build the depth. They don't build the coherent starting group, the coherent rotation. And I mean, very little of their track record suggests they could do that. They have not built coherent starting groups. They've not built coherent rotations recently. So there's a ton of pressure there. Ashley, I think of a super chat. LeBron going to the Warriors. So is KD, big trio. I hope I didn't miss anything. That would be interesting. No, nothing. I thought for a second, I thought you were saying it was going to be like KD going to the Warriors. I was going to say it's completely different, but I don't want to go into that. The Enigma 2004. Thank you for the super chat. Whatever you think of LBJ, remember the despair of 2013 to 17. I'm grateful for what he brought. I think it was time, but I'm pessimistic about us being better next season, even with Kessler replacing him. Yeah, I think this is a great way to put it. And similar to what I just said a few minutes ago, I am on the clock here, so I'm going to go through these next few, but I do agree with you. And this is the challenge ahead for LA. Is he a real one? Veda, real MC. Thank you for the super chat. Brown was great as a Laker and production will be missed, but his ego is a problem. His statement after opting in, Rich's comments on AR, etc. It's time. I understand this side of it too, that some Laker fans, there is a lot of extracurriculars that come with employing LeBron. If you want to be more dramatic, you could call it drama. But so I would say I have less of an issue with the statement, because I think I don't want to relitigate the statement, but it was like, are you going for it or not? Right. And the Lakers, they didn't really go for it last year. It was the bare minimum of let's split our exceptions and then let's flip Gabe Vincent and a second for Luke. So you could also argue that last year's roster clearly wasn't a championship level roster, and they kicked the can down the road one more time to this offseason. Rich's comments on AR, I don't think are necessarily a reflection of LeBron, because I truly believe that Rich is speaking from his perspective and what he believes and what he thinks. But obviously it's not a good look for LeBron. And at a minimum, it's a distraction that became a storyline. And then regardless of, even if it is, which I think just entirely like Rich's perspective on the matter, it then becomes this sideshow where now everyone's talking about it. Everyone's assuming that he's speaking on behalf of LeBron, and it just creates unnecessary drama and speculation and attention that just didn't need to be there. And frankly, like if you look at, people were super chatting and commenting about this at the time. There was like an immediate drop off. Like the second he made those comments about, he said the Lakers were not contenders. Then he said, Austin, you should be a six, or it was more Max Kellerman saying it, the Ginobili thing, but it got attached to Rich. And sometimes perception is ultimately like the most important thing. Those comments, there was a clear decline in the Lakers season, because that was around early December, which started that stretch where they had their worst stretch of the season. Now, that was when Luka went to Slovenia and he was dealing with the family stuff, and Austin got injured with the calf injury in December. And so there was external factors that led to that as well. But I don't know if it was a coincidence that those comments directly preceded the Lakers going into a funk, going to their worst stretch of the season. So I understand that. Like I've talked about this before, it's not fun to cover this. This has been a dance every offseason between the Lakers and Clutch, and to some degree, that's like a weight off of the coverage shoulders. But it's a tricky dynamic, right? And you know, for me personally, like LeBron is one of my favorite players of all time, and I grew up a big LeBron fan. So that is like, it was really cool to cover him, but obviously that's no longer the case. Mint Millions, thank you for the super chat. Why would LeBron leave if he took the minimum and they landed Kessler and Oubre? I think they have puncher's chance to make finals, and he gets most important fifth ring. I think it was happiness, as Windhorst said yesterday. I think it goes beyond just competing for a championship. Like if you're not if you're in a situation where you don't feel respected or you're not jiving with your bosses or your coworkers, I don't want to make some analogy with like some random job, but like if ultimately like you got to feel respected, you got to want to be at your workplace. If you don't feel that way, then it doesn't matter. And on top of this, in this scenario, you're taking a pay cut. So it's like, hey, we know you don't, you have a on and off again relationship with your boss. And like, you know, we've overlooked you with certain things, but if you take this pay cut, like your group is going to overperform and you're going to get this award at the end of the year. Like, I know I'm oversimplifying it. It's not the best analogy, but I just think this was bigger than just having a chance for winning a championship, clearly, right? And I mean, you could argue that of the teams I've named, I think San Antonio's clearly ahead of the Lakers. So if he goes to San Antonio, that to me is more of a trying to win a championship, and even ahead of them if they landed Kessler and Oubre. Golden State, Miami, and Cleveland, those are the three where I think Golden State's clearly behind the Lakers. I would also say Miami's clearly behind the Lakers, and then Cleveland's the one that you could debate, but you know, maybe they have an edge because they're in the East. Do have to go in like 1 to 2 minutes, so I'm going to rattle through these. Jay Spears came to the Lakers because of LeBron, but I'm a Lakers Buha fan now. We ride. That said, doesn't present a great image for Luka. Robbie Avila starting four. Thank you. I appreciate you sticking around, and I hope the LeBron fans stick around at least through the rest of free agency. We'll see how things go. But yeah, we ride, we move forward, and I wouldn't necessarily say that for Luka. I don't think this is on Luka that LeBron is leaving or Luka want. I mean, I think ultimately this was more LeBron driven than Lakers driven. But again, if you look at the actions, the Lakers weren't necessarily amped or weren't necessarily moving like a team trying to keep him. T Monique, thank you for the super chat. Does this free up significant cap space for the Lakers? Technically, no difference, assuming they were going to rescind LeBron's rights, but they will now almost certainly be operating as a cap space team. So this just pushes them in the direction of having the most cap space possible, which right now, depending on if they keep Jackson on his cap hold, is between 48 to 52 million. Mosier, does this make the Lakers a play-in team again? Too early to tell. I want to see what they do. It depends on who they land and how that goes. Is he a real one? Veda, real MC? How likely is it that Smart is gone? I think it's pretty likely. I would say right now, like 80-ish percent. Follows Yu-Gi-Oh! Thank you for the super chat. LeBron and Spurs seem so blatantly obvious to me. I think that would be the best basketball fit for him. And I think they need the Shepherd into their championship era, and LeBron could do that. Now, he'll get backlash, but I also think he'll get back. Like, if he goes to Golden State, it's going to be like, oh, you're teaming up with your rival. If he goes to Miami, it's, you know, you're trying to join the Giannis train over there. If it's Cleveland, maybe that's the one situation he doesn't get any backlash, but regardless of what LeBron does, he's going to get some form of backlash. Easy 1-1-1, get rid of Pelinka next, start Luka era fresh. I don't think that's happening, but it could happen next summer, as I said yesterday, depending on how this transaction cycle goes and how the Lakers perform. Excuse me. Alex, thank you for the super chat. Thank you, LeBron. Like him or not, he brought us a chip. 100% agree. I think regardless of your feelings of him, that should at least be honored and respected. And some people don't respect the bubble championship. So, you know, I know that's a thing, but I think it should be appreciated. J10, J105, who should be point of attack guard? And we need two of those. I think ideally they have a guy who can be a point of attack guard and a wing stopper. And I think there are several guys out there who could do both, but it's tough to say. I would prioritize, like, I think Watson could do both. I think Herb Jones could do both. Tari Eason maybe could do both. Derrick Jones Jr. could do both, depending on if the Clippers are willing to play ball. So those would be some of my top guys. Maybe more realistically, Kelly Oubre is a guy who could be both point of attack and wing. If you're going the Kelly Oubre route, I think you need two of those guys. If you're going some of the previous guys I mentioned, I think you could get away with that guy being your primary wing stopper. But I still think you need the defensive anchor at the five, and your four, in my opinion, needs a baseline level of defense, rebounding, and motor. If you go with a subpar defender, rebounder, motor guy, I think that will exacerbate some of your issues and create different problems. And then Ant dot dot, Duncan Robinson, John Collins, Kessler, Mamu. Ranking these, I mean, clearly Kessler one, I would go Collins two, Mamu three, assuming it's a three-headed committee with him, Jackson, and a starter. Not as a starter for Mamu. And then Duncan Robinson fourth. And then Kenneth, I don't see a question here. I do have to go. I'm going to be starting Lakers Collective, but I will be back after Lakers Collective and going live into the deadline. Shout out to the chat. Shout out to the late night gang. I will talk to you all in a minute or in an hour.